It's time to take this game into overtime.
The official podcast
of the Average Joe's Sports Show
on 90.9 The Light Sports
for our generation.
We will begin here with the Furious Five, and with that, we will begin with a recap of the NCAA National Championship
game.
Do
we have to, Joe?
March Madness. You know we have to.
I know.
March Madness is officially over. Women's March Madness is also over. It actually started, too, if you were keeping track.
UConn was finally dethroned.
Yeah, we're not going
to
talk about that.
We don't have to talk about that.
We don't have to talk about that. North Carolina taking down Gonzaga to win their sixth national championship. 71-65, the final score. The Zags led at the half, but UNC able to come back. They shot just 14% from three. But other than that, both teams were really identical in terms of stats. So we can talk about what this does to North Carolina's legacy, but why don't we start, how do you recap, or how do you rebound out off of a loss like that in last year, a loss in the most dramatic fashion, and then you come back with a win like North Carolina did? They had a pretty tough schedule to get there. Ultimately, strength of schedule ends up helping them. They were more groomed for the game. But a great run by Gonzaga. So start off, where does that leave North Carolina on the season in your book? Recap their season in your mind.
On the season, honestly, throughout the season, they were in the best division. They're in the ACC. They were the last team standing. They won the ACC. Oh, they didn't win. Duke actually won the ACC. But UNC, throughout the season, they just looked like the best team out there. Honestly, it's experience trumps all. It's experience when you have guys like Kennedy Meeks, who's a senior, Hicks is a senior, Joel Berry was a junior, Jackson was a junior. Four of your five starters are junior or upperclassmen. That makes a difference now, because with one and dones, you don't get a seasoned team like this that much. So UNC honestly was one of the best teams, and They rightfully won, even though it was a very ugly game. Gosh, that was so hard to watch.
That was tough to watch.
This game was extremely ugly to watch on just pure basketball standards and referee standards.
It was also ugly to watch because it was the day after WrestleMania, too. So you needed two TVs. But
our minds were pretty fried at that point.
I can't lie, though. I was a little disappointed at the end. I feel like Mark Few kind of gave the game away. He didn't really call too many plays down the stretch, and he just let Nigel Williams-Goss go when he had a sprained ankle. So I feel like they should have called a couple more plays, you know, down the stretch towards the end of the game, but it is what it is.
I'm just happy for Roy Williams, man.
I'm not.
Dude, I love the coach. I love the guy.
Gosh, the guy's awful.
Thomas hates Roy
Williams. But he knows what he's doing when he's coaching.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't coach.
Him personally has more titles than all but six schools.
I know, that's sad to think of, because people are going to start thinking,
what
Roy
aspect
Williams,
of his coaching do you not like, Thomas?
He doesn't coach in game. He's not a coach
sometimes
in game.
Sometimes you can have. So you're saying John Calipari or Coach K does?
In game, yeah. Well, Calipari's a little different because he's not technically
sometimes
one of the best in game coaches.
Sustainable team where you have the upperclassmen,
yeah, but the problem
or
is,
the more experienced players.
Roy Williams doesn't
the game.
Change throughout the years or change on based on the team he has. This is how he's always been. He's always been,
which is why
he's
winning.
He's never that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but now, all right, I'm not saying he's a terrible coach, but now that he has three championships, now people are going to start considering him better than Dean Smith, who he
I don't think anyone's going to consider him better than Dean Smith.
Dean Smith only had two championships.
Oh, I don't think he counted by championships. Not necessarily.
A lot of people do. And now people are thinking Roy Williams is an amazing coach because he has three championships.
How else do you count it, Joe? How else do you count success?
I think it's a total accumulation of how your and trust me, a lot of it is weighed on national championships. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to contradict anything that I had said on this show before, because I knew that I have kind of put weight on championships just in all sports. But I think you take a look at what kind of team you were working with, what kind of competition you're going against, what kind of atmosphere is around you, and longevity also plays a fact in it as well.
I mean, he came out and said right after the game in an interview, they said that he's going to be higher than Coach Smith, and he came out and said, I'm not Dean Smith, never have
no,
been,
he isn't.
Never will be,
and
he was so much
higher.
Better, but we got there because of the guys that I had around me.
No, he got there because it's UNC basketball. Anybody can win at UNC. It's one of the best programs. You can recruit just by showing up.
Well, they're still in the ACC. They still had a great year, and they still
they
had
did
to play
have a
some
great
tough
year
opponents
because they get the talent in there.
Let me break this down. All the opponents they had to play, and kind of grade this on a scale, if you will. They had Texas Southern, Arkansas, Butler, Kentucky, Oregon, and Gonzaga. Is that a fair trip to a national championship?
That is a fair trip.
Are you now, Thomas, McCall, you out on this? Are you now giving credit to Oregon as a credible men's basketball team?
No,
because when we were watching the Elite Eight, and you lost, were absolutely bashing Michigan. Oregon over Michigan. Michigan
because
had a clear try there.
You were
too.
Making the argument that Michigan is a powerhouse basketball program as a whole.
I don't necessarily. Was I making
that
argument?
Yeah, you were making that argument, and I'm saying Oregon hasn't been.
I mean, historically, remember the Fab Five?
Exactly.
That's Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's saying Oregon is a powerhouse.
No, you said Michigan at first.
Yeah, you did.
That's why I was.
Yeah,
because
I said they beat Michigan. They beat Michigan in the Elite Eight.
I wasn't saying they were a powerhouse. I'm saying currently, not in terms of historical standards, but currently. Yeah, I'd say they're a powerhouse.
Last year they made the Final Four since
1939. Yeah, you cannot argue that
they're coming into their own.
How many people?
What are they going to do next year?
How many people do you know are Oregon basketball fans outside of Oregon? Do you know anybody?
Yeah, I do.
Other than Keegan,
his name's Keegan Pardon.
No, he was rooting for UNC actually.
Well,
in that
let me
game.
Tell you this, and I know Adam Fornwalt's listening. When he came over and watched WrestleMania with us last week, I don't know where this is coming from, but he had Oregon basketball shorts on. He did. This is true.
Oregon is
I
think there are more Gonzaga fans out
there
than Oregon basketball
geographically,
fans.
Thomas, okay, we live absolutely nowhere near any part of a bandwagon territory for the state of Oregon or any of its schools, okay? Where do we live in bandwagon territory? Chris, where do we live in bandwagon territory?
UNC.
No. I was just going to say the South in general. Alabama, UNC, the U, any of those schools around, ACC schools, SEC schools, Big Ten schools, Maryland, go up north. There's not really too many schools to bandwagon up in the north because they're all small and they really aren't that good. Yeah, UConn, I guess, but
UConn,
if you're from Massachusetts, I don't know what you're doing in Boston College. I don't know. I guess you're just going to some little, trashy New England school that you went to. But anyhow, the bandwagon territory, if you go to the depths of Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Northern California, I bet you'll find a whole lot of Oregon fans out there. I bet
I don't
you will.
See it.
If
I don't
you're
see
an Oregon
it.
Fan, 434-582-2909.
Maybe for football. Maybe if you're just bandwagging because you're like the football team. But other than that, they're not a powerhouse.
Not yet. They might be. So anyway, going back to UNC, we talked about Roy Williams standing as a coach. How about this? UNC makes it last year. They also make it this year, and this is their sixth national championship. They've been in a whole lot more. There have been alleged reports, and this was first reported last week after the game, that Arizona State fans were bussed in to cheer for UNC in the student section. They were saying it was about a 70-30 split between true UNC students that made the trip and Arizona State fans that have been given tickets and just plain white shirts. And we all know how rowdy Arizona State can be if you watch TED or hear anything else about, the largest undergraduate
Gronk.
School. Yeah, exactly. So that being said, do you think that's on UNC? Now, last year, and they're a team that makes a whole lot of national tournaments and national championship games just as a school, as a franchise all around. Do you blame the school for not bringing their students in? Because I think if it was Liberty and we made the national championship game, I think they'd give us all tickets, whether it was in Arizona or Alaska. I don't think they would hesitate about that. They did it when the woman made the Sweet 16 in 2005. But UNC makes a whole lot of these things, and they made it back-to-back. Do you think that should be on the students or on the school?
I don't know. I don't think it's really on any. Arizona's a long ways away from UNC.
Don't you think that should be a priority, bringing your fans in? I mean, Gonzaga had their fans in there. Granted, it was their first national championship.
If you're a school like UNC, how many students are you really going to get to go out to Arizona?
Yeah, they said the only reason that ASU got tickets.
After being there last year, and how many guys are you really going to get? How many people are you really going to get to go to Arizona?
Shouldn't you get them out there?
Who's going to pay for all those tickets and travel?
Because you have to pay for travel. Oh, come on. They're millions of dollars. That's nothing.
You're also mid-semester, so how many people are going to go and miss classes?
Exactly.
Let me give you an example. When Florida Gulf Coast made the Sweet 16 a couple of years ago, I remember watching an interview with their, I think, president or athletic director that said, yeah, we've had like 1,200 students up here in Philadelphia for 2 weeks just hanging out.
Yeah, 1,200. How many
1,200?
UNC had a ton, I'm sure, too. They probably had thousands of students out there.
No, they didn't, though. They didn't. It was 100 or two. It was not 1,000. It was not even close. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Hey, here's the thing. If you're UNC and you're a fan of UNC, you've seen this happen before. This isn't the first time.
Exactly. That's another thing, though. You put all that into effect.
If this was the Jets, Joe, we're going to the Super Bowl because we haven't seen the Jets in 50 years go to the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas, you told me you were a Giants fan.
Heck no.
But for you, UNC, they're used to this kind of thing. Like, their students are used to always going to championship events.
Are you going to want to go all the way to Arizona and then the chance that UNC loses and then you're miserable? Or are you going to want to watch this with your buddies at home? If you're a UNC fan,
I don't know.
I think a lot of people from UNC would probably rather just sit on their couch and watch this game.
I think that's what they did.
That's exactly
why. And finally, I do want to wrap this up. Moving to this championship, we take a look. UNC, I think Lunardi seeded him as a 3 seed for next year. Not sure what he seeded Gonzaga as. It might have been higher. South Carolina beats Mississippi State in an all-SEC women's championship game that probably none of us watched. But do you think that women's basketball was slightly more relevant this year just because of the thrill of UConn being taken down? I watched that game. It was a great game. It was a very competitive game.
Fantastic
game. And it was not boring at all. So do you think it was a little bit more relevant this year, and what steps could be taken to make it more relevant, if any?
Yawn.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been a big fan of women's basketball, like watching. To me, it's always seemed boring. Like, it's not as competitive. It's not as hard as watching college guys go at it. It just seems like you're watching high school basketball all over again.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say high school basketball, to be honest with you. More of, junior high-ish. But at the same time, Gino Auriemma's a great coach, and seeing him prepare, the women's team at UConn like he did, it was really exciting to watch.
A lot of the ways those teams prepare, they play against junior squads that are all men, especially UConn, probably playing against a pretty good men's team. So moving on here to number two in the Furious Five, as who expected this? Probably everybody at this point. But Marshawn Lynch, Beast Mode, is unofficially back. Could be back officially as early as this week, allegedly coming out of retirement to play for the Oakland/Las Vegas Raiders. Could be possible. Is anyone surprised at all?
No, not at all.
He's a hometown guy from Oakland. Not surprised at all. Yeah, he loves the game still.
Yeah, if he was going to come back, it was going to be for Oakland.
Yeah, I mean, he lives a bike ride away from the stadium.
There you go.
I mean, you can't help but do that. And I don't think Beast Mode, when he retired, was actually fully done.
He's got so much potential.
And I think he was just doing it because he just wanted to get out of Seattle. But as of right now, Seattle still has him under contract. So if he wants to go to the Raiders, Seattle either has to trade him or release him.
They'll release him.
So Jack Del Rio and Marshawn Lynch having a meeting at the Raiders facility this week. He's told them he intends to unretire. He's only 30. He takes a year off. But a couple of the questions that you have to ask. Number one, how is he going to fit into the scheme of the Raiders? They do a whole lot of shotgun, and when he was successful, that was when a quarterback was under center, so they could just hand it right off to him and he'd have a hole in the middle. Are they going to have to change their scheme? You talk about having Derek Carr with Marshawn Lynch. How do you think that's all going to work?
You're not changing your scheme for Marshawn Lynch, who just missed the whole year. You don't know what you're going to get from him. Honestly, you're not changing your scheme. You're going to make him feel a little comfortable. You're going to run some plays that he knows, but you're not going to change your whole scheme when you've got Derek Carr, who is now one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You've got two great wide receivers on either side. You got Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. You're not changing the system for a guy who's over 30, who hasn't played in a year, who
came off an injury, played seven games when he was in the league in 2015.
You can question his commitment. Does he really actually like football, or is he just coming back for money reasons and just to play for Oakland?
I think he's got plenty of that.
I think
he loves the game, honestly.
That's why he's 30 years old.
And then, as we all know, in running back years, 30 years old is, that's a lot of wear and tear on your body.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize that. I was a pretty big outspoken person when guys like LaDainian Tomlinson retired after 10 years, or the case you can make here, the guy, you know, you can always compare somebody who retires early as a running back to is Tiki Barber, because Tiki Barber retired very early, and then after a couple of years decided to try to come back, could not do it whatsoever at all. So now you have to fear, is this what can happen with Marshawn Lynch? But he goes to a team with a good offensive line. He goes
to
a team
great running back last season who, in my opinion, kind of looked like Marshawn running. I think Latavius Murray had a lot of similarities to Marshawn running on the field. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to have to change too much at all.
Minnesota, I believe.
You can't. Latavius picked him.
But now, if I'm Oakland, you can't just bring in Marshawn Lynch. You need another backup running back with
him. What if he's the same player he was in Seattle? You just never know.
He's not going to be
the same.
The reason why I can is because, first of all, you play seven games your 2015 season, you don't play any games your 2016 season. The only way that you're going to be able to keep up that production, I don't think you're just going to come out there and line him up eventually. You take a look at the track record of that happening between players, and that's not certainly the case. Also, just with Marshawn Lynch, his game has really been unlike anyone else's. Just the way that
he's got that old school game.
Way that he plays and the way that he's a downhill runner. Yeah. So, is he going to be able
He's not a three-down back anymore, that's for sure, right?
Yeah,
that's for sure. He's not going to be able to be out there.
I'll give you guys an example,
second,
though.
And third
I think he gets somebody
Akeem
young.
Talib. How old is Akeem Talib, the DB?
Oh, goodness.
He's 31? Up there. He's
30, yeah. I think he's like 31,
mid
32.
What about him?
So, it's just more of like how you can take care of your body, not so much... You know, how long you've been
different
playing.
Different position,
sometimes.
Though. Different position.
Yeah. That's a whole lot of... I think there's a lot less contact in that position than there is in running back.
There's a ton of less contact.
Running back, just about every play, you're colliding you're running or you're blocking. Even if you're just running routes, like you have to break defender off of you.
I said it before. One of the biggest factors is how committed is he actually going to be? Because he's going to want to skip... all those training camps,
practices. That's another thing.
But Jack Del Rio doesn't want him to do that. The team doesn't want him to do that.
And that says something about his character. I think he should come in there humbled.
He's going to try to pull a Brett Favre. He's going to try to pull a Brett Favre.
I could certainly see that.
Show up the day before the first game, and he wants to just be handed the ball.
Maybe change his mind again. So let me ask you this as we cap off this conversation. How many years do you give him?
You give him a one-year deal. You give
I'd sign him to a one-year contract.
Not only that, how many years do you give him in the league?
I don't
give him more than three.
How about as a starter? I give him a year.
I give him a year as a starter.
Year and a half.
I want to see him succeed, but I just don't see the formula lining up. I think it's all about if he can get back in and get back in for training camp, if he can get back in for the preseason. But like you said, he's probably not going
to
do that.
I'd like to see the Raiders bring somebody in younger and have them run under him a year.
Yeah, I think that maybe doing that would be a good idea. You go to the draft. Pretty strong running back class this year. Number three in the Furious Five, Georgetown. The Hoyas have been slumping lots in college basketball over the last few seasons. Haven't made the tournament in quite some time. I'll have to look that up. It's been a few years. Well, they've tried to rebound by hiring former New York Knick NBA Hall of Famer and Georgetown great Patrick Ewing is their head coach. Played in the NBA from 1985 to 2002. But the question is, will he be a good coach? Guys, what do you think of this hire? Where can the Hoyas start with it?
This is a no-brainer.
How much experience can Patrick Ewing bring? Played for Georgetown from 81 to 85.
He was obviously a great player, but we've seen Isaiah Thomas, who was obviously a great player
too,
for the Pistons.
We'll talk about that next. He won the national championship for Georgetown 1984. He was also the Final Four Most Outstanding Player and the College National Player of the Year in 1985. But you can say that was a different time in the game. Where do you start with this? Where do you start with evaluating, just on paper, Patrick Ewing's standing and qualifications to be a head coach here?
Well, for me, I think Ewing as a coach, it's not going to be his basketball knowledge that he needs to work on. It's going to be his businessman aspect of the coaching career that is going to really challenge him.
He already made a mistake on recruiting violations pretty close the other day. He went on the Dan Patrick show and started saying he wanted Allen Iverson to get involved, you know, former great Georgetown player. And he started saying we need Iverson for recruiting, specifically for a certain player. And he started describing this player.
He actually said the player's name?
He didn't say the name, but he started describing the player.
Yeah,
and it's actually, it was a guy who was formerly committed to Georgetown and then said he's going to reconsider things now that John Thompson III was fired. It's actually a guy from Notre Dame High School in Connecticut, Joe.
Oh, wait. Fairfield or West Haven?
It doesn't say which one, but Notre Dame High School in Connecticut.
No kidding.
And, I mean, that was a recruiting violation, and he's gotten a lot of flack in the last few days because Patrick Ewing doesn't know college basketball rules right now, and he's been, an assistant coach in the NBA for the last...
Sorry, Patrick Ewing.
10, 15 years.
Can't do that.
Can't do that, buddy. But it was a no-brainer. If you're Georgetown, you're falling, and you're falling quick right now. This team had a losing season.
Yeah.
They've been struggling hard.
They've had more than a losing season.
They can't stay relevant in a Big East that's really not the Big East anymore. You needed Patrick Ewing, and you needed some high-profile names.
And the Big East is no pushover as well. You have...
Villanova.
Was it one team that made the Sweet 16? Last year, I think it was 4 or 5. But Butler did a good job. No, Xavier. Butler. Xavier as well.
Xavier,
Butler, Villanova got beat.
Creighton.
Creighton's been in there as well. So you've had a lot of competition. And you've had a lot of competition with them playing just great basketball in the last few years.
Hey,
here's Georgetown. They made the tournament in 2015. Before that, so they didn't make it the last 2 years. They made it in 2013. And then before that, made 3 straight. They were a mainstay in the 2000s. They made it in 6, 7, 8, and then 10, 11, 12, 13, and 15. They haven't been too consistent. And then in 2007, they made the Final Four. But that was around the time that they were kind of a powerhouse, if you will,
in
the Big East.
We haven't seen that in years.
We haven't seen that in years. It feels like it's been such a long time. So what does Patrick Ewing have to do to not... be the falter of some of these other coaches, NBA players who became coaches?
Well, he's got to recruit. I mean, we see it at St. John's with Chris Mullin. That's kind of interesting because we're now going to see Patrick Ewing versus Chris Mullin again. They had that rivalry in college when they played for Georgetown and St. John's, and then they played in the NBA together and rivaled. Now we get to see them as coaches again in the Big East. I think that's going to be exciting, but Chris Mullin, he's kind of been disappointing at St. John's. It's only been a year, I think, there, but there hasn't been that much of a track record for Hall of Fame basketball players to come back and be a coach. I know Patrick Ewing wants it, but he's going to have to recruit.
Yeah.
You have to get names in there. You have to start getting top 100 recruits in, and you need to do it quick because you only got a window of maybe 2-3 years to do this, and if not, you're out of there.
I mean, if you're looking at it right now, Georgetown only has 8 scholarship players on the whole roster. Like, you have to fortify that somehow. You have to get some...
You need at least 10.
You guys get some names in there. Graduate transfers, internationals, something. But you have to get some high-profile, big-name players in there.
It's also a matter of getting the respect of the players.
But all it takes is one. You get one great recruit right away,
mm-hmm.
and then that program gets lifted up for a year or two. And then you can start getting them in a lot easier. You just need to get that one.
All right, so not to put you on the spot here, what is Georgetown's record next year? Where do they fall in Big East play?
Oh, man. I give them 500. I'll give them, 18-18?
Wow.
Or is that around there?
They could do a little bit better than that. I know we don't have their schedule right in front of us.
16-16. 500, it's going to take at least a year or two for him to get used to it.
I think they can make at least the NIT.
I think they can make the NIT
next year.
18-16, yeah. Maybe
we'll see
two
how he handles the competition
above.
Of the Big East, honestly. I want to see that. That's going to be good to watch. But Georgetown basketball is going to be relevant again in the Big East. I do like seeing that. I remember I watched him at Madison Square Garden in the first round of the Big East tournament a couple of years ago. It was interesting, but it was sad to see. I think they lost to, DePaul or something. It was kind of like, what's going on with Georgetown? Moving on here, number 4. In the Furious Five, the NHL has made the news this week as they prepare for their playoff push as well. They announced that they will not be participating in the 2018 Winter Olympics. It's right in the middle of their season next year in South Korea. And Gary Bettman has come out and said that he does not want the NHL to be a part of that. Do have a quote from him. So he said, quote, We have previously made clear that while the overwhelming majority of our clubs are adamantly opposed to disrupting the 2017-2018 NHL season for purposes of accommodating NHL participation by some NHL players, we were open to hearing from any of the other parties who might have an interest in the issue. The NHL said in a statement, "A number of months have now passed and no meaningful dialogue has materialized," end quote. So it's kind of like trying to cover his rear by saying, you know, we gave an opportunity for teams to come out and say, nobody said anything, so now we're not going to do it. I know this has angered some NHL players that maybe want to go back and play for their own team.
Yeah, Ovechkin already said he's not going to respect the rule. He's going
to
do it anyway.
Does the NHL have a right to speak for everybody in that aspect?
I don't think so, especially where it's an Olympic game. I mean, if you're an NHL player who's come over here from, say, Sweden, and you want to go back and play for your home team and represent your home country.
Such a diverse palette of players, too.
Exactly. I don't know how you can put a limit on, okay, if you're in an American sport, we're going to make this rule that you can't go play for your home country.
It's tougher than that because it's during their season, so they are the employee.
They are under contract.
Employer, they are the employer. They can, well, they can technically do whatever they want.
There's an example you can use from right over here in the ACHA. You had the World University Games being held, I think it was in February of this year, where basically the ACHA took the cream of the crop in men's and women's hockey and they brought them over to Kazakhstan to play for. And that was right in the middle of the season. I remember when we played Davenport, I was talking to their coach, and one of their star players was over, and he said, yeah, you know, I wanted him back so much for some of these games, I offered to fly him back from Kazakhstan to come play for us. And that creates a little bit of an inconvenience for the teams. But should this be handled overall by the NHL? And the NHLPA has also kind of threatened to get involved with this. So how should this be handled, really?
Well, honestly, the NHL doesn't want to pay for all this as well.
Yeah.
This cost them $20 million, and they have to pay for all those travel costs and insurance and accommodations for their players to get to the Olympics. That's at least $20 million.
And why is this becoming an issue now if players have taken part in the last five Winter Olympics?
I think Gary Bettman has just had enough. He's had enough, and he wants his players there for the season. He wants them invested. He doesn't want to pay anymore. He's having beef with the Olympics.
Probably scared with injuries, right?
I mean, injuries are another thing as well.
And I understand having your league, but I mean, look at what that's going to do for Team Canada. Look at what that's going to do for Team Canada and Team US. I mean, who's going to play?
Nobody.
Who's going to play for teams?
All right, do you 62%
of Canadians disapprove of the NHL's decision.
Obviously, but do you blame the NHL because they're sending their players mid-season over there for free? They're paying for it.
Take an extended break.
Yeah, but the Olympics are getting these players for free. These partners are getting the players for free, and the NHL has to pay for it. They have to have the regular season suffer. Why would they do this and let their partners get off for free, get the free play?
Well, because
they have to pay for it when their players aren't even playing for them during that time.
Number one,
it doesn't make sense.
It gives them some exposure. But number two,
there's no proof that it actually grows the sport of hockey.
Oh, yeah, it does.
There's no proof.
It has to grow the sport of
hockey.
There
is no proof, though.
And I'm not saying I'm necessarily taking a side on this, but it does.
I think they're going to grow fine with or without the Olympics.
No, but it creates an international. I mean, look at some of the great Olympic hockey games ever. We had the USA-Canada game.
You know, we need Andrew in here.
Wasn't that? Yeah, we do, certainly.
We need Andrew in here for
Tune in on Monday. They'll probably be talking about this on the face-off from 6 to 7 here on 90.9 The Light. But look at some of the great games. Look at some of the great USA-Canada matchups. I remember in 2014 in Sochi, I believe, I'm dating myself here, I was only a freshman, I think USA played Canada, right? And I remember some classes would stop and they had it on. They were watching it. So when Team USA plays, and this is also a case in the World Cup, when your team plays, that's a team that everybody can root for, right? We're all American. Same thing with Canadians. You know, they have seven different NHL teams in Canada, but they can all root for Team Canada. We can all root for Team USA. It brings us together, and it brings in other countries
together,
too.
You and I both know that the Olympics doesn't have the same vibe that it used to have 30, 40 years ago.
Why is that?
Because
of decisions like this, maybe.
Because the novelty is kind of worn off. And we have
I don't think there's any novelty of the Olympics.
I don't know.
It is what you make it.
I mean, anytime the Olympics come around, that's all you see people posting about. Anywhere you look, listen, whether it's Twitter,
it's not as big as it used to be.
Facebook.
It's something that happens every 4 years. I think it's a pretty special thing.
Tell me if you agree with this. The Olympics are as big, at least in America, as the amount of exposure they get. So if every Olympic sport is on NBC, sooner or later, you're going to get there, you're going to watch it, and you're going to cheer for Team USA. But if every Olympic sport is on the Golf Channel or True TV, in your extended channel lineup, or not on social media, or Facebook Live, or anything where you can't easily access it.
It's true, definitely.
But that's what I'm saying is, the Olympics is one of those things where you have to go find it. Unfortunately, it's not going to find you.
I'm not saying it's dead anymore. It's still very
relevant. You're saying it's dying. I think
we
should
put... It's slowing down, because it's definitely not as big as it used to be.
I don't think there's a novelty on the Olympics. I don't like when you use that word novelty. No. Heritage and pride. What is the point of the Olympics? What is the point of the Olympics?
National pride.
Exactly. So why should there be a novelty on playing for your team and cheering them on?
It's just the way it is at sometimes at points.
That's something we can discuss later because we got to move on. But that's definitely a good debate to have. All right, number five here. This is something that was long in the making, and it kind of came out of nowhere. But just a couple of days ago, in fact, I think it was yesterday, Wichita State, the Shockers, are moving to the American Athletic Conference. In basketball, they had previously been in the Missouri Valley Conference. So congratulations, Illinois State. You've officially clinched the next three Missouri Valley Conference titles. Have fun with that. Not going to have any problem getting in. But Wichita State reached the 2013 Final Four. They joined the AAC, the likes of Cincinnati, UConn, East Carolina, Houston, Memphis, South Florida, SMU, Temple, Tulane, Tulsa, and Central Florida, with Navy being a football-only member. Wichita State has not had, and actually they're joining in all sports except football. I should mention that as well. They've not had a football team since 1986. That would certainly be interesting. They got a football team. Might take a few years, but could be interesting. So Wichita State entering the AAC. You guys like this move? What do you think it's going to do for the basketball? And the AAC has been fairly strong. I don't want to give them too much of the benefit of the doubt. You had UConn's run a couple of years ago. SMU and Cincinnati, right, both ranked in the top 20 consistently this year. But they weren't able to advance too much, that being said. So what do you think this does for the AAC in terms of their basketball?
It's clear. It's clear this is a good move for Wichita State and the ACC.
And this is what teams have been doing.
This is what they needed.
You move out of the mid-majors.
You needed this.
And you move into, I don't think you would consider AAC a Power 5. I think that title still goes to the Big East. They're like an expansion Power 5, but they're still one of the top conferences.
But the ACC could use a basketball upgrade, and that's what it is in Wichita State.
And
the AAC.
AAC,
the ACC needs one too, right?
And it's an immediate competitive. Yeah. Like, it's an immediate competitor.
They're on next year.
Wichita State needs a conference to lend its level of legitimacy. And that's what they're doing.
They're doing exactly what Liberty's trying to do right now.
What did you say?
A conference to lend its
so
level.
So who has the legitimacy, the conference or Wichita State?
I think
the conference.
I wanted to make sure that you were correct. The conference is giving Wichita State legitimacy.
Thank you.
Yes.
I wanted to clarify that.
No, that's what I was saying. Yeah. The AAC clearly needs the upgrade here with a little more help, because they need to. There's rumors that UConn wants to leave. They don't want to be there. You need to try to make that conference stronger to keep arguably your best team in the conference there. You need to keep UConn in the conference if you want to stay legitimate.
So
Wichita State helps that. They help that cause. And now Wichita State becomes relevant a little more. They're not just a mid-major anymore.
Yeah, they're not. This is the second team that's left the Missouri Valley in the last 4 years. Creighton did it. The Blue Jays peaced out. In terms of revenue, Missouri Valley going to lose a whole lot. It says to leave the Missouri Valley, there is no exit fee if a school provides 24 months of notice. If a school does not provide 24 months of notice, it forfeits its NCAA men's basketball tournament units revenue. Since 2007, Wichita State has generated 16 units for the Missouri Valley. They're going to pay $2.5 million to join the AAC, but they won't actually pay the amount, as future league revenue will be withheld to pay for its entrance fee. So I hope the Missouri Valley's getting something out of this, because you're losing two of your top teams. But it also says, hey, you know what? We're generating some pretty good basketball here in the Missouri Valley. Hey, you know, South Dakota State up in the Summit League. You want to come join the Missouri Valley?
Hey, come on. Come on to the Missouri Valley.
Now, I'm not saying a team like Liberty, because this is also, you know, mid-major, and it's a non-football conference. And that, I mean, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, once you get into the mid-majors, you have mid-major conferences, and you have, like, you have mid-major conferences like Missouri Valley that are maybe they're putting at-large teams in. Like, they're putting an at-large team, and they're putting an auto bid. But then you got conferences like the MEAC and the America East and the WAC and the Big West and the Summit League that are putting one team in, and that one team is somebody that nobody wants to see in because they're getting a 16 or a 15. So the Missouri Valley has been above that for a little bit since he played there in the 60s. Houston played there in the 50s. Memphis was in there in the late 60s, and Tulsa was in there for about 60 years, till 96. That's good for them. What do you expect to see immediately off the bat in terms of recruiting, in terms of Wichita State going into the AAC?
Well, you need, if you're Wichita State, you want to keep Greg Marshall. This is one of the big moves to do it.
Yeah, that certainly honestly, is. It kind of legitimizes, you know, stay with us. We're going somewhere.
Yeah, we're not in the Missouri Valley anymore.
We're going to be playing UConn. We're going to be playing Houston. We're going to be playing Cincinnati.
Now they got some competition, and they're probably, honestly, the favorite to win the AAC next year with the talent that they have.
Oh, I don't know about that. And I haven't looked at the recruiting. I haven't looked to see what SMU or Cincinnati. I'd probably say it's Cincinnati, to be
honest.
Maybe
Cincinnati and Wichita State at the top right now.
But you got to see how they do. This also gives them that conference strength of schedule that they didn't have before. So you can schedule the same. And they've scheduled very, very nice non-conference schedules. You pair that with a conference schedule, their strength of schedule is going to jet up.
Oh, they're going to jet up. They have to play UConn twice a year now. They got to play Cincinnati, SMU, Memphis. Those are four legit schools where you're going to have to play twice a year. Now we get to see Wichita State. Can you keep this going? Can you keep it going for a couple years?